So a little bit more on the dickering part of it. I have seven kids, and they dicker a lot. Yeah. And so, you know, I've always been trying to foster much more amicable environment in my home. And at the same time, I've seen that friendly banter back and forth is kind of fun and yeah. pleasant. Yeah. So how do you, transition from an environment where there's a lot of bickering to maybe friendly banter?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, first of all, if the children are old enough, I'd make that distinction between friendly banter and bickering. Right? Yeah. I'd say this kind of back and forth is a very enjoyable way. And we've seen it in a lot of movies, for example, like screwball comedies are famous for having that kind of relationship, both male and female, men together,
yeah.
less commonly maybe women together. But so draw that distinction. But then what's so obvious about children is that they go over the line.
Sure.
They always go over the line. They carry
that's
things
the
too
problem.
Far. So that's a good occasion for introducing also this notion of the mean, which is from Aristotle and Thomas Aquinas and so on. That part of acting well is to understand what's falling short and what's too far, right? And say, by the way, it's not surprising you're doing this. You're going from bantering to bickering, and you're going to find you do that all the time because that's what we do. We either go too far or we fall short. So just try to watch it, and maybe then you can say, once they're aware of it, then you can help them spot it.
Rich.
Yeah, just on that last part, you're just turning the friendships that are outside the home. You're talking about, 14 is sort of being that line where you kind of are going to have to let go a little bit. But where does your responsibility lie as a parent to ensure that the kinds of friends that your children are forming are the right variety, right, and that they are, in other words, without encroaching too much on their freedom, but at the same time making sure that you're vigilant, because sometimes in our household, if I'll say, so-and-so's not really a good influence on you, and then you feel like you're maybe pushing the envelope a little bit too much. I've got four boys, and my eldest is 18, and I have a 15-year-old and a 13-year-old at the house. I'm mainly talking about the older one that's still at the house.
Well, a couple of things. First, I think it's important to be attentive to this when the friendship is starting to form, because obviously once it becomes very strong, it's almost impossible to do anything about it. Right? Then, secondly, I do find there's a lot of self-censorship, so to speak, that children engage in. I mean, they kind of see a friend going, this can be a time when a friend goes off in a bad path, right? And they'll very often pull away from the relationship themselves. So it's maybe a little bit less hazardous than one might think. Then I would certainly engage the child in conversations. So, look, I have some concerns. I see that there's this group of kids that's hanging out. Also, if it's not directed at the friend, but at what the friends are doing, I went to go with so-and-so and just hang out at such and such a place, and I'm sorry, you're not going to just go and hang out. Right. And if that's what that friend does all the time, well, then that friendship's going to break apart, because your child won't be going along to that place. And I'm not that concerned about freedom in this domain. I mean, I think it's a time-tested thing that parents really do need to control the friends that their children have, because that's so crucial. By the way, important, I think, consideration in choosing a college, who are going to be the really good friends for your kids for the rest of their lives. But I like to do it as indirectly as possible, and I think you do that by making friends with parents, and then the kids naturally form friendships with certain kinds of kids, or kids who are being raised in a similar way. That's the best way of putting it.
Yeah, that's precisely what I was getting at, because often ones that they're friends with, when they're friends with people that you know, because you're friends with the parents, those are pretty easy calls.
Yeah, and by the way,
but then when they're venturing outside of that circle.
Well, but it's also very easy to raise concerns. Like, you know, I have concerns about the direction that you can actually do that with a parent. You know, you can say, look, how are things with so-and-so, and how's he doing? And are you concerned about, you know, the fact that he's going to the such and such place and doing such and such? You can begin discussing that and kind of work together with the other parent. That's really very, very helpful.
Well, I'd like to go back to maybe the beginning of your talk, which was a bit more theoretical, related to virtues so virtues are needed for holiness, and it seems also that they are needed for friendship. And to what degree is friendship equal to holiness? In a sense, like, it seems to me I want my son to be holy, I also want him to be a good friend, but if I have to choose between one or the other, I choose holiness because it seems to be more towards the final goal.
Yes.
So it, at some point, you can be a good friend and not holy, right, perhaps. I'd just like to know if you have any thoughts about that, because it's not clear to me. It seems a lot of your talk was almost equating the two, and I'd like to maybe better distinguish the two.
No, I was by no means equating the two. Right? Holiness is something that's a supernatural gift, and it needs to be fed by sacraments like this morning, the Mass, and needs a life of grace, supernatural life. So friendship doesn't need those things. It's an entirely different domain. So holiness is infinitely greater, so to speak, than friendship. My questions were solely, and I don't identify them at all. It may be different for the case of the relationship between husband and wife. You know, the famous saying of Don Alvaro, he would say when he gave conferences, he'd ask somebody the name of their husband or wife, as the case may be, and then he'd say, well, you know, Betty, who's married to Joe, let's say, the name of your pathway to heaven has a definite name, and it's Joe. Right? Joe, your pathway to heaven has a definite name, it's Betty. Right? So I think that for a married person, the vocation to marriage and holiness is identifiable. But not in general for friendship. My point was just, if you are thinking of this idea of, do you play golf? Swing thought? Right? This idea of a concept. You want a simple concept that's going to serve to unify a difficult action in a certain domain. Right? And I think that would generally, in the examples I gave, we think it's valuable to have that. And so the question I raise is, well, what is that for raising children? And, you know, maybe the question isn't even raised very much, so people don't even think about this, right? And I would say, well, getting to heaven isn't quite right, because that's the goal, but it's not going to be governing the activity itself. That's where you get to at the end of the activity. Right? Of course, all the activity participates, and I'll agree with that also. It's not holiness, because holiness is either a goal or it's something that's too individualized. Holiness is always the holiness of this way of life, of this relationship of marriage, of this thing. So to speak, in the realm of the human, what phenomenon is kind of the right level of nearness or farness, and generality and concreteness that it makes sense to say this is really a serviceable, unifying concept for raising a child? And I was maintaining, I may be wrong about it, this is the first talk I've ever given, you know, defending this thesis. I may be wrong. It's just for you. It's special teaching for Houston.
We're the lab rats.
Exactly, you're the experimental. It may be wrong, but it seemed to me that actually a pretty good argument could be made. And it corrects all kinds of deficiencies, and it helps to kind of focus various things. So that was my thesis. Now, what if friendship and holiness are at odds with each other? Right? So how could that be? Well, here's an example. You have a friend who breaks bad. right? So you're an adult man, and your friend, longstanding, who is a Christian, kind of with you and very close and everything, goes off in a bad direction, breaks bad, right? What then? Do you maintain the friendship? Is that some kind of complicity? Is it support? Is it potentially affecting you? Is there a risk to you also in those circumstances? Or is it apostolic? Is it assistance? Is it a kind of constant invitation of mercy, as Pope Francis might say? Or who knows whether he would say that of this? So I think that's a kind of question where friendship and considerations of holiness, maybe even more basically just simple propriety, would come into play. So those kind of conflicts can certainly arise.
Okay, one last this. Can you elaborate on the grouping mentality? If my kids are older now, and I have that, and I get a lot of pushback, even from my wife, you know, it's Sunday, we're all together, we're going, you know, you can invite all your friends, but we're going to be together as a family. But that sounds kind of like a good idea that I'm sort of splinter off. But can you just elaborate on what you're talking about?
Well, this is something that I've changed on myself. I mean, I think my late wife would, in relation to her, it sounds to me like you in relation to your wife. I would always want the whole family to be together whenever it was possible for them to be together. And she wouldn't want to insist on that. She thought it was irksome for them. And then she's the one who raises consideration of how fitting it is for a large family to break off into different kind of groups, and that's part of the fun of family life, and that encourages friendship. She was insistent. I think I've learned that lesson from her. So I would say, again, it's like we're talking about the mean. There's a mean here. Right? So every time your family can get together as a group, they should get together as a group? No. Right? It's never right to insist that your family should get together as a group? No. Right? Can we find an intermediate? And what the appropriate intermediate is, I would assume that's for you and your wife to figure out, because it probably depends upon your particular family. But for example, to me, it wouldn't be unreasonable to say, look, you know, we go to Mass together, we have brunch together afterwards, and then that's our time together. With young kids, we say on Sunday, that's the family day, and the kids come, in the neighborhood, kids come knocking on the door. We actually just send them away. We say, this is family time on Sunday. But I think when the kids get older, it's harder to do that. Mm-hmm. So I think we might, you know, we'd probably drift over to something like, well, let's have lunch together or family dinner on Sunday. You know, family dinners we need to talk about, but family dinners are crucial. So if you're having family dinners whenever anyone is available and they're not in an extracurricular, some kind of commitment, they're there for family dinner, that can probably answer that need for the family to be together.
Okay, thank you very much, Mike.